Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Guillermo Amaral joins me. We're going to be talking about how to hot patch your Mac, your Windows, your Linux, your iOS, your Android applications with JavaScript. It's like grease making for JavaScript. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Guillermo Amaral, episode 406 for October 5th, 2016. Frida. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Sunnage.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects that are very clever and you might want to be playing with them right after the show, projects you may be using every day and not even aware of it. Joining me this week, no exception to the fact that I'm joined pretty much every week by a co-host this week, Guillermo Amaral. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall, how's it going?
You can tell it's not scripted because I always get that slightly wrong in a slightly different way every single time. Most of this I have memorized, but that's how it is. And it looks like we're speaking to you in your secret bunker somewhere in the west side of Tijuana.
That's right, the underground above ground bunker.
Very cool. And I am, for those of you who are watching the video, I am actually in Santa Monica again, back at ZipRecruiter for the first time in a couple months. Pretty excited to be here. And for those of you who figured out that we're taping Wednesday instead of Tuesday, welcome to everybody in the chat room and everything that sorted that out. We were preempted yesterday by some little Google thing. I didn't watch it, so I had no idea what they actually talked about. Probably some phones or something, but it's not really anything for me. Yeah, so you're actually looking out, if you can see it past the bad contrast that we've got here. The ocean is right behind me. So if there's a tsunami, I'm probably in trouble here. But that's not a problem. That's not a problem today. Earthquakes, maybe. There's still a heightened earthquake watch here, so I was a little scared to come to work. But we're only on the 11th floor, and it's a new building. It should be okay. So anyway, let's talk actually a little bit about what we got going on today. We have I'm going to mispronounce his name. I'll let him introduce himself when he comes on in a few minutes. But Ole Andre Vadla Ravnas, hopefully something close to that. And he's going to be talking to us about the Frida project. And I've been pretty excited since I booked this show because this is going to be a really interesting thing. And in fact, I want to play with it a lot, but I don't know Python or JavaScript very well. But hopefully that won't stop me from playing with it. But what it is, basically from what I could understand from reading the documentation and viewing some of the intro videos that he sent me links to and will be in the show notes after the show, it's basically a way of opening up all of your binary applications or even your source code. You can add it to applications you're developing to provide on the fly APIs to all of your internal subroutines and add functionality or just probe the heck out of it or do all sorts of really wonderful things. And it's not just for one platform. It's Linux, it's Mac, it's Windows, even iOS and Android if you have jailbroken it or rooted it respectively. And what's exciting about this is just in a few minutes, they were able to take a Twitter client, a binary Twitter client, and look at all the URLs it's opening just by adding some instrumentation written entirely in JavaScript. But you can also bind to it with Python and a few other languages. And I don't want to do the whole show, so I should probably bring on our guest in a couple minutes. But Guillermo, what do you have to add to that?
The only thing that I noticed is that if I remember correctly, it does actually work on Android and iOS, even if they're not rooted by the way it actually works. But I'm sure Ole will clear that up. Aside from that, yeah, it does look really interesting. I think they call it the grease monkey for your JavaScript-enabled applications. So it's not on the browser, but running on your application there. So it should be really useful for debugging.
And also, as I was researching for today's show, I saw that version 8 was just released yesterday, so we can actually have a timely announcement from Olay about what is new and improved and extended in version 8.0. So without further ado, we could sit back and forth and we could sit going back and forth. Not sit back and forth. That seems a little odd. We could sit going back and forth trying to guess what we think this is all about, but let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Olay, welcome to the show.
Hello, nice to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
So I'm in Stavanger, the west coast of Norway, in a bunker here, or well, in my man cave in my house, basically. Your introduction was great. It's correct. You don't need a jailbreak, indeed. So on iOS and Android. So, but yeah, really good. I think you got the gist of it, basically.
So let's step back a little bit. What is the problem that this is trying to solve, and how did it come into being? I presume you're the benevolent dictator for life. So how did I'm guessing you started this, and how and why?
Yeah. So I guess you could trace the roots back to me being a Linux user, and at the time people were using Amazon Messenger or Windows Live Messenger on Windows. And I wanted to interoperate with that. And I noticed there was no client that supported webcam. So I started reverse engineering that. And then later ActiveSync when I was hacking on the SyncCE project, because I had a Windows phone at some point. And during all this, I built some tools, called OSpy. And that one kind of, it was handwritten. Well, I was I wanted to observe API calls that were made in a black box application, and I wrote so-called hooks or callbacks that would get triggered whenever these functions get called, and then I could look at the arguments and so on to help me understand gradually build up an understanding. So reverse engineering basically is where I came from. Mm-hmm. But later I was also, as a developer, I observed something is that a lot of projects end up with logging systems. So this was more with a developer hat on. I saw another problem is you end up building a logging system for your application, and then you ship software to a customer, they have problems. And you realize you don't have logging to cover their problems, so you need to add some more logging and ship them a special build and so on. So it's a long feedback loop. And I was thinking it would be good if you could have a tool, you could have your tools work across different versions of your software, so you could maintain that separately. And you could do it like aspect-oriented. You could just attach your hooks at runtime without having to recompile the software. And then also I saw a third kind of angle, and that was QA. So it's kind of cumbersome to have to set up a network environment for testing certain firewall conditions to see that the software is able to handle those. Of course, you have ways of dealing with that, but that's also another way you could also use instrumentation for that. So from the inside of the application, you can replace or you could get a callback when, for example, the application was to connect a socket, and you could then just make it fail with econ refused, for example, to inject errors into applications without having to add mocks or like stub out things. So you could do like black box testing in very interesting ways. So there's the QA angle, there's the developer angle, and there's the reverse engineering angle. And there's the security testing angle as well, which is kind of what I'm focusing on now, because I'm working for NowSecure and we do automated testing on mobile apps. And first, as a concrete example, we do this on iOS, for example. When an app asks for the GPS position, we use Frida to replace that API call and just say, hey, yep, it's this location. And then we'll look in the network traffic and see if we see the same position that we injected. And if we see it there, it means it leaks. It has a privacy issue, and we can report that back in the test results. So there's like four kind of main use cases for Frida, basically.
No, wait a second. Are you telling me that because I don't need to jailbreak my iOS apps, or don't need to jailbreak my iOS machine, that I could use Frida to change my GPS coordinates so I could cheat at Pokemon Go?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, definitely.
Well, there's a use right there. Of course, for me, it's not Pokemon Go. You're never going to get me to play that freaking game. I'm too busy still playing Ingress and creating portals so they can use them in Pokemon Go. From what I understood, is Niantic seeded all the portals directly from Ingress. But anyway, so let's back up a little bit. From what I understand, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, the way this works is pretty phenomenal to me. You actually use tools to inject, is it like a V8 JavaScript engine into the target app? And then you tell that to be able to stub out or replace somehow the existing calls to existing, say, user application calls and also operating system calls?
Yeah, so the way this is built, it's highly modular. So you have a C library that's called the Frida Gum, which is like the instrumentation core. That knows how, at the lowest level, given an address in memory where a function is, give you a callback in C whenever that function is called. It can do other things as well, but that's like the core thing that this library can do. And then you have the higher level. We package that up into a shared library, and then we inject that into a running process. And then we establish a communication channel with it, and then we tell it to run pieces of JavaScript on V8 that it also has embedded there. These scripts have then have access to the full API of this GUM, this instrumentation core that I talked about, the C library. So you could use it directly from C just for instrumenting like a low-level known JavaScript or anything, or you could use it like a high-level, which is just this inside this other process, run this piece of JavaScript, and then you have a way to also exchange messages with it if you need to communicate with your agent running there. I call it an agent because it's whatever you want it to do.
And one of the things I was amazed by was, first off, the discovery process. It seems like, again, I've only just seen the demo with Twitter and a couple of other things that that were on the videos you sent me. It seems like this thing can go in and probe and figure out the names of all the subroutines that might be there. Now, are you just observing the calls, or can you actually inject alternate calling and modify the return values as well?
Great question. So you can you can modify things because the callbacks that you get in JavaScript are synchronous. So you have access to the arguments or the return value, and you have access to the registers. So you can also modify the registers. If you really know what you're doing, I mean, you could put a probe in the middle of a function even and read out registers and change the registers. So you can do a lot of things at that level. As I said, it's synchronous. So so you can it also block if you want to and send a command to your tool that's running on the other side. And then ask you to do something and wait for it to return to you. So that would be more like a debugger kind of thing, which you can build on top of this, basically.
So now it just occurs to me, if you can inject this into a Linux app, I'm surely hoping that setuid goes away when you do this, correct?
No. So you need to the challenge is, of course, getting into the app. But you have several ways of doing that with Frida. You could use it with LD preload. That's one way. Or you can do it like the easier way is to just attach to a running process. That means that on Linux, we use ptrace for that. So that means you have to be able to do ptrace that other process. And that's a kernel policy that you might have to tweak to allow that. So You can do that. It would be better if we had a kernel driver on Linux because it would be harder to detect and so on, but we don't have that for now, so we rely on ptrace. But essentially what we do with ptrace is just we allocate some memory in the other process and we hijack an existing thread there and make it spawn a new thread for us running this code that we injected or the memory we allocated. And that one takes care of then doing dlopen to load our library and establish a communication channel back to us.
Okay, now Sorry, go ahead.
But this is highly OS dependent. So on Mac and iOS, I have written a custom dynamic linker that doesn't even need to use. It doesn't have to touch the file system. So because of sandboxing, so if an app isn't able to read from the file system, it won't be able to dlopen our library. So I have written a dynamic linker for that, so you can directly map in our shared library into the other process without it having file system access. And then there is an OS API to create a remote thread. So on Mac and iOS, it's easier. On Windows, it's pretty easy as well because there's OS support for this. But we don't have a custom dynamic linker there yet. But the goal is to have to do this a bit stealthy so that it won't interfere with anti-debugging. Of course, this will be a cat and mouse game, but it's something that we'll keep improving for sure.
Now I'm getting even more scared that if I keep pursuing down this direction, you'll be giving out the toolkit for how to do all this. So I'm going to shut up about that stuff right now, except that I'm probably, since you work for a security company, it probably is going to actually make more work for you. So let me go back to this thing of not needing to jailbreak iOS. That's a pretty closed system. How are you able to influence, say, a running Twitter client on iOS?
Yes. So we don't actually it's a bit special in that case because we have to repackage the app. So we take the app and we add a shared library, our shared library. We call it Frida Gadget in that case, to it. And then we re-sign the app after injecting a load command, like a macO load command, so that when the app boots up, it will load our shared library as if it was one of its dependencies. And then we of course, have to re-sign the app. So this means you need a jailbroken device to harvest this app or get it decrypted, basically. And that there's ways of doing that that has been used for security testing a lot, where they will decrypt the app using a jailbroken phone and then repackage it and run it on a non-jailbroken phone that might be running a newer version of iOS. So but if you have access to the codes, of course, you can just compile it in. That's easy. But if you don't, you can still repackage the app, given that you have a way to get the app in the first place.
Wow. Guillermo, I thought you had something to ask here.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, my cats are winging out in the background there. Yeah. Yeah, so I did have a little question. So you mentioned you can compile this into your own application. So in that case, if I already have something running, let's say a V8 engine in the background, for script processing internally, whatever, would that affect the way that works, or can I use that V8 engine, or are you still going to inject your own, or how would that actually work there?
Yeah, we're still going to inject our own. So we have V8 statically linked. Everything is statically linked. So our payload is self-contained. There's no moving parts. We also have another one for smaller systems, like embedded systems, that's based on duct tape. So you can build Frida without V8 to get a much smaller payload, basically. The goal is that we don't want to interfere with the app. We want to avoid touching the heap of the app if possible, so that you can, for example, dump the heap and look at things without seeing your own allocations. So the goal is to be as transparent as possible, and that's something we continuously improve. So the JavaScript engine is embedded in our shared library, and it's not exposed in any way. And also when we unload, we make sure that we clean up all memory allocations and OS handles and so we don't leave any garbage left, leave any garbage in the app, so that if you attach to a long running process like a daemon, you won't have it clogging up with and leaking resources and eventually blowing up. So, we try very hard to avoid leaving anything behind in the app, basically.
Could I actually use this to get more information from the application, not just not just hook into whatever calls are happening, but maybe get the amount of RAM that is getting used and how long a thread has been running, stuff like that?
Yeah, you could definitely do that because this JavaScript API gives you access to an FFI API, meaning you can call native functions. So you can call any function that the app can call. So if you have symbols for your app, you can look up in those to find internal functions and call them to introspect your state. If you don't have symbols, you can use, there's a memory scanning API, so you can scan the memory for a certain pattern. Say if you know that an internally linked OpenSSL has a certain, the decrypt function looks like this, you could look for it and then you could hook it. So you could also deal with that kind of scenarios. Lastly, there's one pretty cool thing. Like on top of this FFI API or foreign function interface API, allowing you to call native functions, I have built a Java integration that's for now it's only for Android, but it could also be ported to run on to work with other VMs. But that one will find the process, the current VM, and allow you to get JavaScript wrappers for Java classes that are there. Look at their methods, hook methods, so you get callbacks when Java methods are called. And likewise, I have built one for Objective-C, a similar integration. So you can interrupt with different runtimes that might be inside the app. In the case of Objective-C, you can do objc.available to know if the runtime is loaded in the process. And if it is, you can inspect the classes that are loaded and hook functions there and so on. You can even define new classes in that case. So you can do a lot of things. And in the future, it would be awesome if people build other integrations for like Python or Perl or other runtimes that might be hosted in apps. So you can inspect and manipulate those runtimes as well, and not just native functions.
Yeah, I'm sure Randall will be happy to hear Perl being used in there. So you did mention this also works on embedded, right? So I'm guessing it's embedded Linux, or do you support something like QNX also?
Yeah, we also support QNX. That was contributed by someone from Cisco who does a lot of black box security testing. He regularly gets new equipment to test. And at some point there was a car, I think, and it was running QNX. And so he ported Frida to QNX. And he might have also dealt with routers or something because he needed MIPS support at some point and he added that. So, he was also the guy who started the duct tape runtime, which is unlike V8, it will run on really constrained systems. So it doesn't need a lot of memory and has very, very predictable runtime characteristics, so you don't have to worry about garbage collection pauses as much.
Nice. I'm guessing you would be able to run this separate from the main monitor application, right? So if I have something running on, let's say, like you mentioned, QNX is used a lot in the automobile industry, especially for like the UI section and stuff like that. So I would be able to run the glue part on the target, and I would be able to see everything on my host machine. Is that how that would work?
Yeah, that's one way. You could also run everything on the target. One common way is to deploy a Frida server. That's just like a headless Frida. And then you can use the existing tools to connect to it. And for iOS and Android, we also integrate with iTunes and ADB, so you don't have to forward ports manually, and it's just seamless. You just plug in the device and it works. But on other targets, you have to set up an SSH tunnel or something, some way to establish TCP connection to the device. But Once you have that, you can inject into processes and so on.
And I think I read somewhere that you had a DBus backend for communicating. Is that something that happens only on Linux, I guess?
We use peer-to-peer DBus, so we don't depend on any daemon or anything like that. We just over TCP or platform-specific transport, we speak DBus peer-to-peer, so there's no daemon. And that's just a handy RPC, a way to do RPC, because we're using Vala internally for that, the Vala programming language, which compiles to C and integrates nicely with the rest of the software stack that Frida has. So, we use that for communication, like at the protocol level, but it's completely hidden behind the APIs.
Okay, and we do have a question from the chat room here. Plutonium Shore, I thought it said Plutonium Store, was getting excited there. Practical applications. Do you have any examples of practical applications? Somebody who would actually use this to maybe introspect, let's say, like in the video you shared with us, you can see how you we can see how you see the calls made by the Twitter app, right? But could you use this for something else, or do you have any, an example that you've actually used this to figure out an issue with some other application? Maybe my cat's going nuts in the background. I'm sorry, I have way too many cats. I don't know any time you've actually used this that made you go, "Wow, I'm glad I wrote this."
The most recent example was I was trying to find a memory leak in Frida, and then I used Frida to instrument itself. So I had another copy of Frida that I used to instrument it to track memory allocations because I knew what kind of functions were involved. And in a matter of minutes, I had my own tool for debugging that. So custom debugging tools are very handy. You also have other people who have used it for building overlays for games. They instrument the game and then they might have a heads-up display or something where they're showing you metrics that they collect from the game. I think there was also a company that built something for poker players using Frida where it would look at your cards and give you hints about what kind of moves you should make. And there's been a lot of penetration or pen testing security usage where people want to figure out what if this banking app, someone could run any code inside of it, so what can it do? And it could maybe try to brute force a PIN code and see if the backend handles that well. There's other, so besides reverse engineering, there's also custom debugging tools. And there's also people who have used it for they have an application that's defunct, it's no longer maintained, but they have data in it, and they have found a way to get their data out of the application so they can migrate to a new solution using Frida. That's another use case. Let me think. And there's, as I said, security testing. But I'm sure there are use cases that I haven't even thought of, so... because the idea behind Frida is that it just gives you an instrumentation toolkit to build your own tools. It has some tools that you can use for tracing APIs and things, but there's probably even cooler tools that we haven't even thought of still to be written, basically. So
that is one of the things I saw in the video, and I was actually pretty impressed by, is that you also have been targeting this not just as a set of out-of-the-box, ready-to-use tools, but also as a extension platform. And you gave it a very liberal license. I think it's the Apache license, but correct me if I'm wrong. So that people could LGPL. Build... LGPL, okay. So that people could build other things on top of this. Is that happening already? And can you give us some examples?
There have been. I've been focusing a lot of the marketing efforts on the security space. So there's been a lot of tools by researchers for doing security assessments and things like that. But I haven't spent enough time marketing this to developers, which is a very important audience as well. So I think, yeah, and that's why it's great to talk to you guys, because I haven't spent too much time on focusing on security, the security use cases, and I'm sure there are a lot of awesome developer use cases still to be thought out.
I was just going to say, what kind of overhead is this adding to an application? I mean, is this efficient enough that I could, for example, inject a segment into all of my production web servers and then maybe using some sort of JavaScript callback, or maybe if I can even put Node.js in here, I might even do APIs that I could call out to and gather statistics that I could put on my dashboard that tells me that my my apps are running at a certain efficiency. Is this fast enough for that, or is this slowing the application way down? I mean, where are we at in the spectrum there?
So if you use it at the C API level, then there'll be the overhead will be negligible. If you use JavaScript like that and the whole the high level way of using it, there will be a bit of overhead. But I've primarily been focusing on iOS and Android over the last year or so, and I think I measured on iPhone 6 CPU, it would the base overhead, like an empty hook, like a synchronous callback into JavaScript of an empty function, would be a few microseconds or overhead. So you can have quite a few calls per second before it becomes a problem. That also depends on, the lowest overhead was actually duct tape because it has less overhead compared to V8. V8 is faster when it's running the JavaScript, but the transitions between native and JavaScript will be a bit more costly. But with duct tape, so if you use duct tape, you can even tweak the garbage collection so that to avoid pauses. You can have really low overhead, but it depends on, of course, how you write your scripts. Because you could be, if you do a lot of allocations, it's going to slow down a lot. But it all depends what you do in those callbacks. So far, the overhead has been, I haven't had much need to for profiling it. I've done it a couple of times and fixed some low-hanging fruits, but there's no. The overhead is low generally.
That's awesome. And given that this is, five platform, cross platform, what kind of considerations did you have to have in constructing your libraries and in being able to port this to so many places? Do you have friends that run all the different platforms so you can get things compiled and see if things are going correctly?
I started the Gamma instrumentation library around the time when I was working for Tandberg, building video conferencing software. And at the time, we were building a Windows product. So at the time, I spent a lot of time on Windows. And then at some point, we were porting this product to Mac. So I spent a lot of time on Mac. And then I also ported it. And this started like in my spare time. And then we started using it for unit tests at work. There was also a Skunkworks project to port it to Linux, so I spent time porting it to Linux. And now these days, I have, out of laziness, I'm using a Mac. And then I have a secondary machine that has Linux and Windows and dual boot, so I'll fire up that one when I need to do serious development there. But otherwise, I have a continuous integration setup so that I get all the tests run and get feedback on every build, so to avoid breaking things. I rarely have to switch OSs, but sometimes if I'm breaking stuff, I might switch for a few hours. So I jump back and forth between OSs to maintain the different backends, basically. But I hope over time there will be more maintainers can help out with this. And yeah, we have a good start now with the guy who did the QNX port and MIPS port. So,
you know, that is one of my next questions, but I want to get a question out of the chat room real quick here, also by Plutonium Shore, who says, if you have a standalone Frida server, can you point it at a mystery device? And I would presume that also means, say, a mystery process, and gain information about what it does, maybe a use case for system and network admins.
Right. You could, from this JavaScript API that you have access to, you can look at the loaded libraries and you can look at their exported functions. And then you can use, you can hook any of those functions. And that way you can gain an understanding of what kind of APIs it's using. There's also another API for tracing code, like taking a thread and tracing it. And I have there's a demo if you Google for CryptoShark, it's github.com/Frida/CryptoShark. That's a demo app that's using that code tracer but it's combining it with the hooking or the getting callbacks for different APIs. So what it's doing is giving you a list of threads, and there's also hooking a few functions, like a typical UI function, a typical networking function, a file IO function. And as soon as one of those functions are called, it tags those threads so you can see which threads are using which kind of APIs. And then you might go ahead and say, I want to trace this thread. And then you can look at all the functions getting called. So that's another way that's more intrusive. And unfortunately, that part is x86 only, like 32 and 64-bit x86, no ARM or MIPS yet. But yeah, you have different tools you can use. And I could imagine people building higher-level building blocks for just giving you an API to observe or assess what kind of application something is based on what kind of APIs it's using.
Is this something I could use, for example, to point at every application that's installed on my Mac in some sort of serial loop that might determine if some malware has injected itself into anything I've got on my box? Windows, I guess, would also be the same sort of issue.
Yeah, that would be possible to do the mass instrumentation, so to speak.
Wow, this is pretty exciting. How long has the project been around? And you mentioned the person who gave you the QNX feedback and code. How many developers have contributed to this code base so far? Sounds like it's almost just you, but talk to me about that.
Yeah, most of it is me, but there have been there's contributions from time to time, I think I started with this reverse engineering the video codec that I talked about around 2004, and then ideas from that turned into Frida Gum, which is the instrumentation core, which was I started on around 2008. And then I did the injection part on Windows in 2010. And I think it was 2011 or 12 that I did the JavaScript part where it would be scriptable, basically. Up until that, it was only like attached to this process and it could give you a fixed set of things like list the loaded libraries or scan memory for this or things like that. And then JavaScript entered the picture there. It's still relatively new in its current form, I'd say.
Cool. One of the things that I found, well, actually, let me follow that up first with the question of, so you just released 8.0, and I presume the timing of this show taping had a little bit to do with that. So what's new in 8.0 and why is it important?
Yeah, this release, I was just focusing on improving the quality and bugs, basically. Frida's API, you can basically say, the high-level API, you can say attached to this process, and you get the session object back. And the session object, you can use that to create scripts inside that other process and things like that. And then At some point, you can say detach, and it will unload all the scripts you have created there and detached from the process. So it will unload the shell library and so on. But now at work, we've been building like higher level libraries on top of this, and there might be two libraries that decide to attach to the same process on the system. And those two libraries don't know about each other, and one of them calls detach, and the shared session is detached, and that's not what you want. So in 8.0, I made it so that they are each one calling detach gets his own session, and they're handled individually, so they don't step on each other's toes. And there was some other performance improvements, basically about how the API, like how we were passing byte arrays around to avoid some memory copies. And thirdly, and there's also a feature where you can like these scripts can pass you JSON messages, so you can get a message from your script, or and you can post messages to the script. And next to the JSON, you can also put a binary blob there, so you don't have to encode. If you're going to transfer a buffer, for example, from after receiving something from the network, you don't want to encode that as text and put it in the JSON part. You can just pass it out of band, so to speak. So I just added so you can pass binary data in the other direction too, like to the script and not just from the script. Small things about things that require API breakage, and then there's been some a lot of bug fixes. So I hope this will be a really good release. Just started testing it, so I can upgrading. The products we built on top of this at work. So we'll see how it goes.
So you've been shepherding this for, it sounds like, over a decade, at least from the initial ideas about it. One of the things I know about everybody who's done something like that over a decade is that it starts to take on a life of its own and in directions that you might not have originally anticipated. What's been the most surprising thing that's happened in this project for you?
I think it was I think it's got to be the black box reverse engineering of a car. The software will be running there. That was not something I had anticipated. I think that's the number one surprise.
That does seem pretty amazing. I mean, I wonder if any of the engineers that have been claiming that they've, you know, been able to hack cars, I wonder if they've actually used your toolkit to do that. But also, in that same line, what else is out there that does something like this? You obviously have been keeping your ear to the ground to be able to incorporate other people's ideas in Frida. So, in what sense? It sounds like you're at the head of the pack. It sounds like nobody else is out there doing this level of complexity. Am I correct in assessing that?
There are bits and pieces. So you can get libraries for hooking functions, like getting callbacks whenever functions are called from at the C API level or C++. You have a lot of those, but they tend to be for one OS and one architecture, or maybe two, and it kind of stops there. There's not a lot of projects that try to do it on all these platforms and making it scriptable at the same time, which is I think very important, because you have it's too tedious to write all these things in C or compiled languages when you just want to do a quick instrumentation. So of course, there's systemic tools like dtrace, but it's not really the same, because that's system-wide. This is not system-wide, so they both have their pros and cons. Frida, obviously, it's very easy to interact with the app because you're inside the app, but it's hard to do system-wide things because you need it attached to all the apps. There's There is one project that has a lot of overlap that's called SciCrypt or Script, I think it's. But that's a Mac and iOS primarily, a bit of Android, but more like a spelunking tool, like an interactive REPL than a toolkit. But I have forked that project and ported it to Frida, so that might be worth checking out. It's called. It's at the Now Secure blog. If you look there, I should have included that in the show note links. But yeah, that might be worth checking out. So you can use that on all the platforms that Frida supports, basically. And that's like it's a REPL, and it has its own language. That's a superset of JavaScript. So it adds support for structs and things. You can declare C types there, and you can call functions very easily that way. What I did was that I just took the project and forked it and used their compiler, and then this was already running things on a JavaScript runtime, and then I've just replaced that with Frida. So I've implemented the same APIs, but on top of Frida, so it can run on all the platforms that it supports.
One of the things I found the most interesting, Guillermo, my turn.
Go ahead.
One of the things I found, what is one more follow-up than you mean in the chat room? Okay, anyway. So one of the things I found fascinating watching the demo was the notion that even though all these platforms, these five platforms, call their subroutines differently, like whether they have the args in registers or whether they have the args on the stack in a particular way, that you somehow are able to abstract that out so that it looks the same to the JavaScript. So the JavaScript is essentially portable, in your particular example, it was, or in the presenter's example, between Twitter on OS X and Twitter on iOS. Was that difficult to do, or is that just the natural part of the design?
The function hooking API, I designed it so that it would have no knowledge of the actual calling convention, or there's two. This API has like two ways of using it. You can either attach and get like an onEnter and onLeave callback before and after the function is called. That one doesn't know anything about the calling convention or where the arguments are, but it gives you like a magical args object. So if you use like index 0 on that one, it will look at, it will assume the platform's default calling convention and access it according to that. So that will work for a lot of APIs. But if the API has like a struct there instead of a plain value, it's not going to work. But the advantage of this is that you can mass hook. You can like hook 300 functions and you have the same callback. You don't know anything about the functions. You just know their addresses in memory. So this is very flexible. But as soon as a function has a very particular calling convention, you have to spend some time on that. So, but you have access to the registers and the stack, so you can read memory and do what you can get to everything. But it's a bit tedious. And then you have the other way where you can replace a function, and that requires you to define exactly the types of the arguments, how many they are, and so on. And then it's your responsibility to call the original function if you need to. So that's more tedious, you need to write more code to use that. But in that case, you can work with structs by value and things more easily as well. So you have these two APIs. The first one is really flexible because you can just hook things without knowing what they are and gradually build up your hooks. You can you could have your hook just call a callback, and then you could live update that callback while it's running, like by sending pieces of JavaScript over and evaling them. So you can refine the hooks live, and that's what you saw maybe in the demo there, where you save the file and it suddenly updates the hook. It was designed that this first part of the API was designed so that it wouldn't need to know anything about the API, and it would be very careful not to clobber registers unless it had to. And it's also, if you don't specify online turn on leave callbacks, you can also give it just a function, and then you can use it as a probe. So you could put a probe in the middle of a function. And that gives you even more control. So you could use that, for example, if you have a static analysis tool like radar.org or IDA Pro, which is a commercial one, you could then analyze all the functions, and you could use this to put probes on all the basic blocks or the pieces of the function, and you could use that to build a code coverage tool. So you could measure code coverage by counting how many of your probes were hit. So yeah, many use cases basically, but the core APIs are simple, and then the idea is that there will be community building libraries on top of this to give you easy ways of instrumenting different things without having to know about platform specific details. So for example, if you want to trace crypto APIs across different platforms without having to think about OpenSSL versus Microsoft's SSL library versus Apple's and so on.
Okay, so now that it's my turn to ask, I'll ask. do you know if Frida is being used for something else besides introspection? So I'm thinking this could really be useful if you want to add or mod, for example, the Android UI or some other application that, you know, has some feature lacking in there, but maybe you want to add it in. Since you can kind of do this without too much overhead, especially if you do it on the C side, I suppose. Have you ever heard of somebody using that for that?
I've heard of people who want to use it for that because there are like Cydia Substrate and Exposed, for example, on iOS. Exposed is on Android and Substrate is on both for this kind of things. So that's something of a direction I think we need to go in, or just package Frida up so it can be used like that easily. Like, because so far I've been focusing on non-intrusive usage, so that you'll be able to instrument something without modifying or instrument processes on the system without making any modification to the system, like not modifying anything. But it would be nice to build a tool or like a framework, so to speak, for extensions, because it would be very easy to build that on top of this. Can you just reassemble the things in a different way, basically?
You know, KDEP has this application called Gamma Ray that kind of does the same thing, but for Qt applications. So I'm thinking if this is kind of working the same way with the whole injection, except that in Gamma Ray, you're not really injecting a V8 engine in there. But maybe we can kind of work together into making something that works well. I don't think we're actually brought up the license. Is that something that could happen?
Yeah, definitely. Our license is, effectively LGPL, because we have LGPL components. But our actual license for Frida stuff is WX widgets, which means just LGPL with a static linking exception. That's just to communicate that we don't mind that people statically link our code, but obviously they have to comply with the LGPL if they statically link our dependencies. But yeah, LGPL effectively. There's usually not a problem even static linking LGPL code as long as you provide a way to relink your product. But yeah,
I did notice you also have the. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, so if that's not problematic, yeah, that would be awesome.
Oh no, yeah, I'm thinking you could actually use this for a lot of things, especially since you don't have to compile or recompile the application in both cases. I can see how this could be really useful for embedded, and especially for the automotive things we do in the company. So, it kind of, you know, a little light bulb came up here. You can't see the halo anymore. You just have a halo when the show started to the sun. I also noticed that in the code you have something for QML. Is that just a front end, or what exactly are you using QML there for?
Yeah, that's just a binding. So the high-level API that I talked about, where you say run this JavaScript inside that other process, like that level of API, that's a C API. Well, it's written in Vala, but it compiles to C and gives you a C API. And then I have built a Python language binding, a Node.js one, and a QML one. And the QML one gives you more like a declarative style API, so a bit different from the other ones. And likewise, there's also a Swift API. So these are just bindings for this high-level API, basically.
Okay. And is there a place where people can share their scripts they've made to maybe try and debug an application or hack some remote server somewhere, I guess. I wouldn't really use the remote server, I guess. But, maybe for an application that you downloaded from somewhere, is there something already existing?
There is a module in NPM called the Frida Compile. That's just a command line tool to help you compile scripts, like non-trivial scripts where you want to compose your script from multiple files. And the cool thing there is that your script can require another module, and that could be a module for NPM. So you have thousands of existing modules that you can use. And there are some Frida-specific modules in NPM. And Frida Screenshot will give you screenshots. The idea is to do it on a lot of platforms. For now, it's only iOS. And there's UIKit for interacting with the UIKit on iOS, like for automated, like looking at buttons and hitting them and so on. And there's Frida Trace for declaratively tracing APIs and a few others. And I hope there will be that community will publish more Frida-specific modules that can be used to compose your own non-trivial scripts, like for building complicated or comprehensive tools on top of this. Because Frida just runs a blob of JavaScript, and Frida Compile is this tool that just assembles one blob of JavaScript from one or more modules that you might get from NPM or have locally.
I was thinking, I was looking at something like Wireshark and how it has a number of plugins, and then there's lots of other security tools and penetration testers and things like that also have their package of things. Do you foresee, or has it already happened, that Frida would end up being like a plug-in to some of these tools?
There is. There will soon be an integration announced for IDA Pro, which is a disassembler where someone has integrated Frida there. So you could just go to a function and right-click and say, I want to hook this one, and you get feedback in the UI. We have a Radara integration, a static analysis tool, radara.org, R2 Frida is what it's called. There have been some others as well. So I hope to see more of this. You could all build like a Wireshark at the API level, for example, that hasn't been done yet, exactly like that. So.
Cool. We're almost out of time. There's a couple of things I want to cover absolutely before we let you go. One is, so you're doing this mostly you. What are you missing the most in terms of expertise that you want volunteers to step forward to help with? And I presume you probably don't have many translations set up yet. So I presume you need some help in translating this. Why don't you give us a shout out? What kind of people do you want to work with you on Frida?
Yeah, documentation is like number one. Because the current website we have is really focused on security a bit, or reverse engineering. So like as a developer, how would you use this to build maybe a debugging tool for your own open source project? That would be awesome. I mean, just seeing more use cases. And of course, as I said, language integration, runtime integration. So ways to introspect if you're inside a Perl process, for example, and to look at things there. And so likewise for other language runtimes. Documentation cool new tools for your use cases and integrations with other runtimes, basically.
And we've covered a lot of territory. I have a feeling we could go on for another half hour, 45 minutes at least, if not another hour or two. But is there anything we didn't cover that you really want to make sure our audience is aware of at this point? I know that's a tough question because you have to think back of everything we covered and then subtract that from the things you wanted to cover.
Yeah, I think we touched on pretty much everything. No, I think we're good.
And of course, people can go to the links that will be in the show notes for this, but Frida.re, Frida. And is it Frida or Frida?
Frida. It's Frida, a pun, okay. on Ida or Ida, but it's a silly pun. It was initially Free Ida, but Ida is a static analysis tool, and Frida is a dynamic analysis tool. It's just a fun pun.
That's amazingly awesome. I know I have a number of friends that once I told, that I was doing this show today, they said, I am definitely tuning in, or if I can't tune in, I'm definitely going to be, watching for this in the feed. So. Awesome. I think this is a kind of a game changer. I really, I don't say that very often, but I think what you're doing here with Frida is really sort of changing the way we think about, closed source apps, if not also ways of quickly adding debug interfaces or QA interfaces or maybe even instrumentation to our production open source apps, and so nice that it's all cross-platform. Awesome. I don't know if you've gotten the full implication of what you've created here, but I know I'm excited about it. So thank you for coming on. Oh, wait, I got two more questions. Sorry. They would kill me if I didn't ask these last two questions, but thank you for doing the project first. What's your favorite scripting language? I can guess that one.
Oh, wow. I really like the Python syntax.
Yep.
But I really also like JavaScript.
Yep, I kind of guess that would be the answer. Okay, and the second question is, what's your text editor? What do you spend all day in?
Vim.
Yes.
Occasionally, I will use Xcode if I'm doing some Xcode development there, but mostly Vim.
Right. Well, I guess given the nature of your product, both of those are pretty expected answers. And someday, again, I'll get somebody to say both Perl and Emacs, but it's going to be a while. Anyway, so thank you for being on today's show. And I'm sure many people now are running right to their keyboards and going, where is Frida.re? I want to go find out some more about this. This looks pretty exciting. So thank you. Thank you, Ole, for being on the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Very cool. That was, get all the names right again, except I've scrolled up now. Whoever this is, Ole Andre Vadla Ravnas. What do you think, Guillermo?
This is going to be a great tool that I'm going to add into my, my toolbox, if you will. Because, I've been looking for something that does something similar like this for a while, especially since I usually get binaries whenever I work on a client project. That I need to try and figure out, and most of those don't come with debug symbols on them. So I'm thinking this is really going to make my life easier. So he's got a new fan now, which is me.
Yeah. Well, I can see so many use cases for this because I'm looking at and both good and evil, sadly. But with great power comes great responsibility, and with great JavaScript comes debugging the heck out of it. But no, but
so true.
Oh, they let anybody do this show. Okay, so, but I'm seeing so many different ways this could be used. I like that he's looking at pen testing, that he's looking at just, kind of seeing what the heck is it doing Is my binary app making secret calls to report the URLs that I'm visiting? You know, is this copy of Firefox doing that to me without letting me know? That sort of thing. This is like I said, I think it's a game changer. I think if nothing else, it sets a new standard for the kinds of things you can do with open source software, and everybody sort of pitches in. And the fact that he's done this mostly on his own is amazing. So get out there and help him, guys. You know, my audience is well versed in many, many things, and I think Ole deserves some additional support and some additional caring and taking care of. Anything else, Guillermo, before I wrap up the show?
Actually, I think that's it. I would like to invite everybody who does, like you mentioned, who is interested in this sort of introspection work to help them if we have any out there, which I'm sure we have. We have a really wide audience. So
we got some in the chat room even. I mean, it's sort of obvious that people are fascinated by this and are, you know, plutonium shoring specifically because of, and somebody named Noel, which I don't know how to pronounce that. I don't know if you pronounce it as like just being quiet for a second or not. Anyway, so let's talk about who's coming up, because I have a really good list, and we've actually scheduled a couple of new ones, which is really interesting. We've got, of course, next week we've been talking about Linux Presentation Day, which is a Europe-wide intro to Linux Day that happens in simultaneously in multiple cities. We're going to be talking to them, hopefully, I think, ahead of the day that actually is going to happen. I hope that's coming up soon. Just added to the schedule, if the phrase, "you're in a maze of twisty little passages all alike," makes any sense to you, and you know who you are, you're going to be really excited by the two shows that are following the Linux Presentation Day show, because we have the IFTF project, the Interactive Fiction TF. I forget what all the letters mean. But anyway, it's about a whole organization that is dedicated to, at least when they're working with the organization, dedicated to these sort of interactive fictions and automating those and building tools to automate those and preserving them in all of their existence, like the Great Colossal Adventure, the one I quoted about the twisty little passages. And if that's not exciting enough, they have an open source project out of the whole thing. Well, most of it's open source. The data is going to be open source for the things that they're capturing. But they have a project called Twine, which is how to build those sorts of applications with its own Twine language to be able to do complex relationships, things like that. So I'm looking forward to that, because I am an old school command line adventure player back in the day. So, you know, there's even one of those inside Emacs. So it's called Dun, D-U-N, for Dungeon or whatever it is. You can actually play it inside Emacs. It has two different endings, depending on what the middle version says. Anyway, Chick Tech, dedicated to retaining women in technology workforce. MetaBrains, which is community-maintained databases, which you may know from their first big project, which was MusicBrainz, being able to analyze your unlabeled CD that you've now ripped to be able to put the actual track names on them by looking at the sounds of each of those tracks and having a central library where people could upload names for things and then other people could discover what they actually have ripped. ZSH, there we go. Tools for managing your ZSH config. I am a ZSH user when I'm not using Perl. So ZSH is my primary shell, and this is about all those different things you would put into your ZSH config files and managing them and sharing them, things like that. Just added to the schedule, Zalando, which is actually the beginning of probably about three or four shows that we're going to bring on in sequence, or maybe gapped a little bit depending on who else is landing those shows. But it's a giant fashion platform with 19 million users, primarily in Europe, but they've open sourced and support these open source projects to help their platform work and also to be used for independent things other than just fashion. I mean, my idea of fashion is going to, you know, Scotty Vest and ordering my next shirt, which I'm wearing again. So I don't know anything about fashion except fashion with pockets. But anyway, this is going to be a lot broader than that. We're going to have a couple of people to kind of come on and kick off what the sub projects are going to be about. And then we're going to bring those projects on individually as time permits and as schedule permits. Got a bunch of other people on the short list. If you go to twit.tv/floss, which is the homepage for this show, you'll see the big spreadsheet linked from there called Here's What's Coming Up on Shows. If there is a project that you want on this show that is not on that list, it means I'm not already talking to them, then please have the project leader, community coordinator, email me, merlin@stoneandshut.com. That email address, so you don't forget it, is on the homepage for the show, twit.tv/floss. Still booking some remaining shows in Q4. We have a live stream we took questions from, normally 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays at live.twit.tv. Today it was Wednesday because we got bumped by the Google show yesterday. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus, and also at Floss Weekly, it tweets over to for announcements about shows I've booked and shows I'm about to go produce. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. That tweets over to Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, if you want to follow me on Twitter instead of Google Plus. If you think Google Plus is dead, for example, you can just follow me on Twitter. Seems to work really well. A couple of plugs for me, and then I'll turn it over to you, Guillermo, for a few minutes. Last couple of weeks I've been talking about the Code Maven open source podcast, the CMOS, code-maven.com/CMOS. My friend Gabor Szabo, who is a big guy in the Perl community, has been interviewing, we've been doing the Code Maven blog for a long time. We finally started a podcast. I am on episode, I think it's 16 of that. And that is now out. I recommend that you go over and check out his podcast. It's short. It's only maybe 20, 25 minutes long. Different topics all over the spectrum. Again, code-maven.com/CMOS. Go check that out. And Gabor already said that he's gotten quite a bump from listening to my listeners, from y'all, going over and listening to his show. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much. On a sad note, I would like to also reference a slight moment of silence for Peter Hinchens, who we had on show 195, talking about his wonderful project ZeroMQ, has passed away. He had a long-standing battle with cancer, and he chose euthanasia just a couple, I think it was yesterday, actually, yesterday. And you should go back and listen to twit.tv or watch twit.tv/floss195 to find, he was a brilliant man, and sad that he was taken so young. Well, probably older than me, so I shouldn't say so young. But anyway, Peter Hinchens, rest in peace. That's all I want to plug. Guillermo, anything for your list of things?
I guess people can follow me on Twitter. That is at GAMARAL or Gamaral. You can also just Google my name. I have a YouTube channel that I post videos on there. And I have a couple of new shows on YouTube, which will be released next month, hopefully, if I can sort out a few things. But I guess that's pretty much it. Just, you know, everybody stop whatever you're doing. Not if you're driving, but, you know, you can keep driving. But just go to Twitter and follow me. That's pretty much it.
Cool. Well, Guillermo, thank you once again for joining me on this show. Today's show, you had a number of wonderful questions to inject that I probably wouldn't have thought of based on your relative experience. That's the great thing about this show is that I've had some experience and my co-hosts have had other experience. So it's kind of nice having that overlap as we talk to our guests. I'm running a bit over. I think we're about 10 minutes over at this point. So without further ado, we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.